talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind him switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way to live in. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking side of me, running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog and dying. If you don't love it, leave it. Love this song I'm singing, be warned. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on AltRightTV.com or WhiteResistanceRadio.com. You can reach us through either route. Well, this is Paul Fromm. More news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Have you heard of a little fellow named Canon Hinnant? C-A-N-N-O-N-H-I-N-N-A-N-T. Well, unless you watch some of the alternative media, or V-Dare, run by my good friend Peter Brimelow, you may not have heard of this little fellow. He was murdered. He was brutally murdered. He was shot in the head. He's 5 years old, little white kid. Shot by a neighbor. A scrawny-looking Negro. For no apparent reason. Now, if it had been the other way around, a white man, neighbor, had shot a little black, a five-year-old black kid in front of the kid's sisters, little sisters. Do you think you'd have heard about it? You sure would have. It'd be all over the news. CNN would be braying about it all the time and probably blaming Donald Trump for it. Anyway, here's the story. It's hard to read these stories. Few people seem to care about them. And the corporate media completely ignores. Perhaps a few family members and friends will remember their name and how they died, but not many. And for daring to care, for even considering their life had value, and how they died, being murdered, it's worth remembering, you become a pariah. One family member of Rebecca Putniewski, a white woman who along with her daughter was murdered by a black man in 2018,
demanded her story be taken down during the George Floyd Black Lives Matter orgy of violence. Rebecca and her white daughter were murdered by a black man, but their white lives had less value than being woke in the face of the Black Lives Matter tsunami swarming, washing over America, forcing all white people to kneel before their new moral overlords. And that's one of the problems of pleading guilty to systemic racism. Notice how he phrases it, moral overlords. You give them unfairly a moral advantage. All lives matter, writes Peter Byrne. Well, white matter, lives too. If there's one story perhaps being the fitting denouement of Paul Kersey, it's this one. Darius Sessoms, S-E-S-S-O-M-S, a Negro, walked up to his neighbor's kids, three white children, who were riding bikes outside their home, placed a gun to a five-year-old white boy's head, and executed him in front of his two sisters for accidentally riding his bike on his lawn. His name is Cannon Hinnant. And there were a few local reports. Wilson, this is in North Carolina. Wilson man wanted in fatal shooting of five-year-old apprehended. That's W-R-A-L. A Wilson man was in custody Monday night about 24 hours after police say he shot and killed the five-year-old boy. Darius N. Sessoms, 25, was apprehended in Goldsboro by members of the U.S. Marshals Service, Carolina's Regional Fugitive Task Force, Goldsboro Police, and the Wayne County Sheriff's Office. He was charged with first-degree murder and was being held without bond in the Wilson County Jail. Police were called to a shooting in the neighborhood of the 5100 block of Archers Road on Sunday. Family members said Cannon Hinnant was playing outside his father's home when he was shot in the head. The boy's two sisters, ages 8 and 7, saw their brother get shot, according to Cannon's mother. Cannon was taken to Wilson Medical Center, where he died. No details about a possible motive for the shooting have been released, but police said the shooting wasn't random. Sessoms lives next door to Cannon's father, and a neighbor said that the two men had dinner together Saturday night and that Sessoms was at home earlier Sunday. Doris LeBrand, who witnessed the shooting, said Sessoms ran up to Cannon, put the gun near his head, and fired after running back to his own house. My first reaction was that he was playing with the kids, LeBrand said. For a second, I thought that couldn't happen. People just don't run across the street and kill kids. She said she realized the gun was real when she saw Cannon's father's reaction to the shooting, and she quickly went inside her home, locked the door, and tried to call 911. You don't expect to see somebody shoot someone, she said. Cannon's grandmother said the family was happy to know that Sessoms had been arrested, but they're devastated by the young boy's senseless killing. Many times, when doing the whole, his name is, her name is, trope with Paul Kersey, and the trope refers to Chuck Palahniuk, the author of Fight Club, in his graphic novel Fight Club 2, as a homage to Taylor Burden. I think back to the July 2011 day when a friend got a text that Brittany Watts had been murdered in the streets of Atlanta. A year later, we find out that it was an anti-white racial murder perpetrated by the black shooter to rid the world of white privilege. What happened to Cannon Hinnant, though we might be seeing the early stages of a profound shift in thinking, where the story of a five-year-old white child murdered execution style by his black neighbor and the complete silence from the corporate media. They just spent nearly 3 months canonizing a black man who once put a gun to the belly of a pregnant woman he was robbing in a home invasion and then died of fentanyl overdose while resisting arrest in Minneapolis. We're not very often told he'd been on fentanyl. It provides the much realization to a lot of people that to our elite, white lives don't matter. It takes dramatic examples to shake people from their apathy and indifference toward the evil peddled as morality by our elite. His name is Cannon Hinnant. Right now, tens of millions are learning his name and how he died. They are starting to realize that to our elite, white lives don't matter. They're asking why this story isn't all over the media outlet, yet George Floyd, a convicted felon, somehow became a hero worthy of burning down cities, tearing down statues, and momentarily losing sanity over. And once they realize why this is, they'll learn the truth of interracial crime. What more people implicitly know, stories such as Cannon Hinnon's execution-style murder by his black neighbor make the explicit possible. Their lives matter, too. It's very interesting that I'm doing this story because it's in conjunction with a story. I got a phone call today and talking to a friend of mine out in the interior British Columbia. I was told that a neighbor had said, oh, our little town, it's a little village very close to the American border in the southern part of British Columbia. It's a village called Carameas. And the neighbor said to my friend, our village is famous. It's on the news. It's all about a sign called It's Okay to Be White down at one of the local bars in town. Well, some visitor took exception to this. And this, of course, made the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation the local news. Now, before we go any further, let's be very clear what the sign says. It's a bumper sticker. It's okay to be white. It's white letters on a black background. And then there is a white hand making the O symbol for OK, you know, the first finger and the thumb joined together. So, okay, what could be offensive about it's okay to be white? Well, if you were offended, that would mean you don't think it's okay to be white. It's not okay to be white. Is that a tenable position? Everybody is supposed to have the right to be proud of their heritage, who they are, Indian pride, black pride, and so on. Well, this isn't even exactly a matter of pride. It says it's okay. It's okay to be white. See, this is, I think, to counteract the pervasive and brain-addling white guilt that's being forced upon so many white people. Yeah, it's okay to be white. Okay to be proud of who you are. That doesn't put anybody else down. That doesn't say blacks don't have a right to be proud of who they are, Native Indians don't have a right to be proud. It's not against anybody. It's for people. In the education racket at one point, we were told we should try to build self-esteem or a good self-concept on the part of students. Well, I agree and I disagree. I agree if you put in the proviso where we're merited. And some people are needlessly humble, that they you know, don't recognize their own value. But anyway, so what's the story? And you wonder, you would think that it must have been a pretty slow news day if this is even a story. A Vancouver man is speaking out against a pair of stickers with racist messaging displayed at a BC bar. Whoa, hold on. Racist messaging. It's okay to be white. Well, what would it have to be not to be racist? Well, it's you're trash if you're white, or you're no good if you're white. Oh, is that what it is? That's a very easy smear, a communist Jewish smear, you know, invented by Lev Davidovich Bronstein, or otherwise known as Trotsky. This smear by the word racist. Okay, Tom Cato, or Kato, is a Japanese Canadian who was traveling with friends through Carameas, which is about 100 kilometers south of Kelowna. That's about 60 miles south. Actually, it isn't that far. CBC, I mean, they're so screwed up, they can't even get that right. When they stopped at a local bar for something to eat, they noticed a sticker near an emergency exit that said it's okay to be white, paired with an image of a hand giving the okay sign, which the Anti-Defamation League says has been used to express white supremacy.
Who's the Anti-Defamation League? Well, it is a free speech hating lobby for militant Zionism. So it's not exactly balanced.
So, but it says it's being used to express white supremacy.
But the sign doesn't say that. It doesn't say whites are supreme or whites rule or something like that. It says it's okay to be white.
When I first saw the sticker, everybody kind of went a little quiet and it was a little uncomfortable for us, Cato said. Then they saw another sticker behind the bar, which made them think that they were put up by bar staff. He said he thought about the stickers the whole time he was in the restaurant. It's not right, Cato said. As a visible minority, people in that situation shouldn't feel uncomfortable over the color of your skin or your culture or anything like that.
But it doesn't say you should feel uncomfortable. It says white people, it's okay to be white. It doesn't say you're no good to be Japanese.
Branding Iron Bar and Grill owner Carl Schorb said he doesn't think that the stickers are racist. I'm not a racist. I have nothing against anybody. I love everybody. I'm a happy person, and that's all that counts for me. He said, encouraging anyone who takes issue with the stickers to talk to him about it. He said someone questioned him about the sticker more than half a year ago, but otherwise the stickers have been up for 3 years and no one else has complained. Schorb said he was unaware of the sticker's racist undertones, but when asked if he would take it down, he said he would only do so if forced. If the law forces me to take it down, I'll take it down, but it has to be by law, not by me. Now, I am pleasantly encouraged by the fact that Mr. Schorb, the owner of the bar, actually stuck to his guns and didn't cave in, give in, and say he'd take them down and give a big old donation to Black Lives Matter or the usual guilt-ridden approach. And he says he doesn't hate anybody, he loves everybody, he gets along with everybody. I think what we have here is for once, and I hope the bar owner sticks to his guns, for once, the usual minority intimidation didn't work. And this is where common sense comes in. What did the sign say? The little bumper sticker, it says, it's okay to be white. That's positive. And to say that that is somehow wrong implies that you think it's not okay to be white. So what are you going to say to a young white person? Well, actually, right from the start, you're not okay. That's quite a burden to put on people, but that, unfortunately, is the psychotic burden that much of the social justice warrior types, the cultural Marxists who so dominate in our schools, that's the type of burden they'd like to put on white people, especially on white children, that you're somehow bad unless you grovel to minorities. Well, I want to play a particularly good broadcast that was sent my way by Diane King and Jim Rizzoli, and it's a really all about the COVID conspiracy, and this is a very good short broadcast. I really like it.
Shame on you. Hey, fool me, can't get fooled again. In 2010, Forbes magazine accurately reported on the WHO's fraudulent response to the swine flu. The Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe declared the false pandemic is one of the greatest medicine scandals of the century. By their own rules, a pandemic requires simultaneous epidemics worldwide with enormous numbers of deaths and illness. 11 weeks into the outbreak, only 144 people died worldwide, and the WHO declared a pandemic. Just 1 month before, they changed the rules. You could now have a pandemic with zero deaths. And when questioned, they claimed the old rule never existed.
Now, there is some confusion here, and I hope to clarify. Having severe death has never been part of the WHO pandemic.
The WHO director, Dr. Margaret Chan, then went on to push left-wing politics, the redistribution of wealth for equity and social justice, and claimed that a welfare state is the savior of globalism. Over $18 billion was misallocated on this fake pandemic. In 2005, Dr. Peter Doshi published a paper entitled, Are U.S. Flu Death Figures More PR Than Science?, drawing upon data from the CDC. The CDC bundles together influenza and pneumonia and counts them together, which is strange, because according to their own data, there are far more deaths caused by pneumonia than the flu. For example, out of the 62,000 pneumonia and influenza deaths from 2001, only 18 cases were lab-confirmed influenza, 0.03%. From 1979 to 2002, there were an average of 58 influenza deaths per year. In 2004, CDC Director Glenn Nowak gave a presentation wherein he called upon the media to state concern and alarm, predict dire outcomes, and urge influenza vaccination. The Flu Protection Act of 2005 required the Secretary of Health and Human Services to conduct public influenza awareness campaigns preceding every flu season. Sales of the flu vaccine began skyrocketing, bringing in billions of dollars to the manufacturers, all for something that kills, on average, less than 100 people a year. In 2007, the New York Times published an article entitled, Faith in Quick Test Leads to Epidemic That Wasn't. It explains how the same PCR tests being used now for COVID-19 misdiagnosed over 100 healthcare workers in New Hampshire and rang the bell for a whooping cough epidemic that turned out to just be the common cold. The PCR tests were never meant to detect a specific virus, and yet they are being used today to detect COVID-19. The CDC even admits that the PCR test will detect any viral infection as COVID-19, including the common cold. The current data from the CDC on COVID-19 shows the same fakery that we have seen so far. Just as the CDC falsely counted pneumonia deaths as influenza deaths in the past, they are now counting both pneumonia and influenza as COVID-19. You can see it clearly in the CDC's own data. Beginning in the end of March, right after the shutdown began in the U.S., pneumonia and influenza deaths dropped to zero, just as COVID deaths began to surge. COVID-19 is a quantifiable hoax. After years of unchecked big pharma fraud, we are witnessing their greatest swindle yet, and the amount of people wearing the mask only illustrates how effective their scam is. Will the mask wearers take the experimental vaccine for fear of what amounts to be the common cold?
A very good question. Well, it was a very good broadcast.
Hi everyone, Jim Rizzoli here, Holocaust denier extraordinaire. Today I'm going to talk to you about one of my favorite topics.
Yeah, so I think we'll, we've had what we need here. Anyway, I thought that was extremely good. Meanwhile, out in Calgary, Alberta, the Muslim mayor of the city, and a foreigner, find another place to live. Mayor condemns hate aimed at proposed Black Lives Matter mural. Now, this purports to be news, and why I'm such a critic of the fake news media, well, is because it's fake. And it's not professional. And I want to define what I mean by that. Professional means that they do a good job in as news reporters. And first of all, what you have to have for a good news report, whether it's in TV or radio or newspaper, is the facts. A news report should, as Sergeant Joe Friday used to say in the 60s era TV detective show Dragnet, the facts, ma'am, just the facts. Without editorializing about how you feel or what you like, you don't like. Just the facts. That's what a news story should do. Present you with the facts. Now, of course, there's plenty of room in a good newspaper for opinion. That's why you have editorials and you have opinion columns where a person signs his name. And sophisticated readers understand that what appears there is opinion, not necessarily fact. Well, anyway, we see the rotten report he writes in the headline. Find another place to live. Mayor condemns hate aimed at proposed Black Lives Matter mural. Okay, well, is it hate? Mayor Naheed Nenshi condemned the action of those who made hateful comments toward a community group who proposed to create a series of Black Lives Matter murals. Now, this is in Calgary, which does not have an awful lot of Negro people. So he condemned those who had objections to these murals. The Pink Flamingo was planning to replace the Giving Wings to the Dream painting located at 7th Avenue and 1st Street Southeast, but delayed the project after they were met with online backlash full of hate and outrage. Oh, really? Hate? Or just objection? I object to this. I would object if I were in Calgary. What is happening to the people at Pink Flamingo is disgusting and has no place in this city, and she said. I couldn't care less what you think about that mural. You have no right whatsoever on this city to engage in that kind of threatening behavior. And if that's how you feel, find another place to live. It's too bad the guy doesn't speak proper English. You have no right whatsoever on this city. He means in this city. But anyway, so if you don't like the mural, well, you've got a right to your opinion, but shut up or leave. Well, wait a second. Who gives him the right to tell people to leave the city? If anybody should leave, maybe this weird Muslim should leave. The mayor said he didn't think it was a good idea to replace the current painting on the building, but was open to discuss where the Black Lives Matter mural should be placed. So I mean, even he has some objections. However, he said people use this as an opportunity to spread hatred. What I don't appreciate is the people who have used this as an excuse to fight the issue of anti-racism. And I don't appreciate the racists who have used this as an excuse to push their own views. Oh, people don't have the right to push their own views if his Islam ship there thinks they are a racist. And you've got to read this very carefully. I don't appreciate people who use this as an excuse to fight the issues of anti-racism. Well, I'm a dead set opposed to so-called anti-racism because, and by this time you almost know the refrain, anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Several local organizations came out with a letter, Solidarity for Pink Flamingo, saying the mural meant more than just a piece of artwork. Quote, It meant the people could see a visual representation of inclusivity and love in the city. It meant that organizers could feel proud of a project they'd worked so hard on. So putting up a mural about Black Lives Matter shows inclusivity. No, it shows exclusivity. It says Black Lives Matter, but presumably white lives don't. And as a matter of fact, as I've pointed out on numerous occasions before, both in Canada and the United States, Black Lives Matter is run by a group of white-hating Marxists. And it's not really about securing a better future for blacks or promoting the value of black lives and everybody else's life. No, they say almost nothing about black crime. And the major cause of death for young black males in some cities like Chicago and Toronto isn't cancer, isn't a motor accident, or COVID-19. It's other blacks shooting. Black Lives Matter? Yeah, okay. Tell it to violent young blacks. Don't tell it to me. But some anonymous person says, but the message that the city sent back was one of vitriol and violence. City Council approved putting $120,000 from its public art reserve toward mural projects highlighting the Black Lives Matter movement. Now that is one colossal waste of money. Colossal waste. Always like to hear Tucker Carlson. And here's his commentary tonight about Sleepy Joe Biden. The country isn't shut down enough, says Joe Biden. Don't lift the lockdowns, not until people learn how to vote correctly. And Biden wants to make masks mandatory. Keep that in mind if you're an American. Biden wants to make masks mandatory. He wants to put you in a mask. And in civilized countries, the only people who, the only creatures who wear masks or muzzles are dogs.
Joe Biden has not waded too deeply into questions of public policy recently, in case you haven't noticed. Whatever else Biden may be doing, looking at funny cat videos on the internet, shuffling to his mailbox every afternoon, it's fair to say that he is not running a campaign about ideas. But Biden has made at least one campaign promise so far. He's pledged that if elected, he will force you to wear a mask when you go outside. Now, Biden didn't specify which epidemiological studies would justify a law like that. That's probably because there aren't any. Not a single one, but whatever. Biden has never been much of a science guy. He is a lifelong politician. His specialty is not public health. His specialty is power and coercion, so he does what he knows. Instead of explaining how wearing a mask when you ride your bike alone could possibly save anyone's life, Biden instead demands that you forget about your so-called rights as an American and obey his orders. No questions allowed. Otherwise, you're unpatriotic. If it sounds familiar, that's because we've seen a lot of this lately. Democrats have decided to use our public health emergency as a political weapon to win the election. Turns out that's easier than trying to fix the country. Terrified, unhappy populations want change, and that's welcome news to the party trying to take power. That's why they're doing it. But what's the cost to the rest of us, to America? It's profound. Thanks to restrictions that are rooted in politics rather than science, children cannot go to school or play with their friends. Parents can't go to work. People can't get married or attend funerals. Human contact has been drastically curtailed. These are not small things. They're essential human needs. Without them, we can't live. In May, we talked to a father whose teenage son killed himself, he believes because of isolation caused by the coronavirus lockdown. It was a crushing segment and hard to watch, but it's worth watching. Here's part of the conversation.
My young 12-year-old boy, 3 days before his 13th birthday, took his life. Hayden was a normal kid. He wasn't depressed. He died of the COVID virus. He didn't die of the COVID virus, but he died certainly because of the COVID virus. The isolation has created that what I believe and what I worry and what I'm warning every parent in America tonight. An emotional tsunami is sweeping this nation, I'm very concerned about it.
He had reason to be very concerned about it. That was nearly 3 months ago. The country has become sadder and more isolated since. In fact, the lockdowns have driven Americans to the edge, and that's not speculation. According to new data from the CDC, fully a quarter of all young people in this country between 18 and 24 recently have considered suicide, seriously thought about killing themselves. That is a massive and terrifying increase over previous surveys. It's a tragedy. Anxiety and depression are at record highs. Many Americans have fallen into a spiral from which they will not escape. Because of coronavirus, many people are now unemployed or isolated at home. And as a result, the drug epidemic has intensified.
You shoot up, you smoke, you do whatever it is you do, pop a pill, and the world goes away for a while.
Joe Cordovano runs Fresh Start Ministries in Orlando and says they're seeing more relapses and more stories of drug abuse as a result. Nationwide, it's the same story. The National Institute on Drug Abuse estimates that since the outbreak, overdoses are up between 30 and 40%. People are depressed. You see it all around you. They're depressed because they're cut off from one another. They're depressed because their lives are moving backwards. According to data collected last month, 12% of American households in the richest country in the world are now routinely short on food. More than 20% of all renters in America are behind on payments. Keep in mind, these data were collected before federal unemployment benefits expired. People are abandoning their pets. Prescriptions are going unfilled. We can go on. Big parts of this country are becoming poor. But you don't hear about it much, because to the media and our leaders in Washington, it's not a very big deal. They can't imagine worrying about money. In Washington, they live in a city with guaranteed full employment, always and forever, thanks to the federal government. And it affects their attitudes. Here's Tony Fauci, the most political man in the most political city in America, telling you that going broke isn't really a big deal.
I know it's difficult, but we're having a lot of suffering, a lot of death. This is inconvenient from an economic and a personal standpoint, but we just have to do it.
It's inconvenient, says Dr. Fauci. Remember when you respected that guy? Remember when he seemed like a legitimate public health expert? We knew he was on the show. We treated him like a physician. Now it's clear Fauci is just another oily politician on an ego trip, just like the rest of them. In case you haven't been to a supermarket recently, Fauci is featured on the cover of In Style magazine, photographed by the pool. Man of science. What a buffoon. But Fauci isn't suffering during the lockdown. He's loving it. Tony Fauci is enjoying the hell out of himself. So is CNN. Jeb Zucker understands that the lockdowns are the only way his personal friend, Kamala Harris, is ever going to run the country. So his anchors dutifully berate the public for not obeying, even as they ignore the rules they demand that you follow. Watch the bodybuilder's roid rants on the subject.
All right, so while most Americans are staying inside, or should be, right, if they're not out protesting like fools, they're not happy about being told to stay home. Staying home saves lives.
And the rest of us should be staying at home for our mothers and the people that we love, and to keep us farther apart will ultimately bring us closer together in this cause. Our collective conscientious actions. Staying home.
Stay home! That's the order. Except, of course, when you're pledging allegiance to the Democratic Party. And in that case, feel free to flood the streets. It's healthy. In New York City, for example, local politicians gathered in front of Trump Tower to paint Black Lives Matter on the street. Social distancing was not required. Even old Bill de Blasio showed up high as a kite, as usual, and did his best to make a straight line. Jeb Zucker didn't complain. Of course, the media loved it. But keep in mind, not all public gatherings are equally safe. Some are incredibly dangerous. It's hard to know the difference unless you're politically attuned. In New York, the city just announced it will not commemorate 9/11. As it always does this year, the traditional twin beams of light over Manhattan will be dark next month. Why? Because officials say they can't risk the safety of the crews they would need to set up the memorial. Turning on two lights is just too dangerous right now. There's a pandemic out there. Do you take them at their word? You think that's the real problem? Come on, you know what's going on. Anything that brings people together, that unites us as a nation, that gives people pride in their country, stopped. Anything that causes division, fear, panic, anxiety, hatred must be amplified, no matter how many kids kill themselves as a result. There's an election coming up. Here's Dr. Biden explaining the rules.
If I were president today, I would roll back the reopenings in a number of places. And everyone, wherever there is a significant percentage of people with COVID, should be required to keep social distancing and masks. Bars should not be open. There should not be congregations of more than 10 people.
Oh, so after consulting with his advisors, all of them political advisors, Biden has located the core of the problem. It turns out America isn't shut down enough. People might be tempted to go to church or have dinner with their friends or work for a living. Kids could wind up in school and learn things that haven't been pre-screened by Google. Somewhere, a young couple might decide to take a walk through the woods without masks to enjoy nature and fresh air. And if things like that continue, happiness might return to America. We can't have that, not until people learn how to vote correctly.
That's, I think, a very good commentary by Tucker Carlson. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on The Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. And I'm going to take my musical break right now, and I'm going to play some hits by a man. He's had some problems in his life. He's overcome them. He's a good Christian man. Randy Travis has just a wonderful, wonderful voice. This is Randy Travis. And, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on The Fighting Side of Me.
All others, It's just a matter of time. I'm
just lost one hell of a girl, but she's okay, and I'm okay. Let's just leave it that way. No, I don't mind telling the world, I just lost one hell of a girl, but she's okay, and I'm okay. Let's just leave it that way.
One was headed for vacation, one for higher education. to them we're searching for lost souls. That driver never ever saw the stop sign. And 18-wheelers can't stop on a dime. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, heaven only knows. I guess it's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. That farmer left to harvest a home in 80 acres. The faith and love for growing things in his young son's heart. And that teacher left her wisdom in the minds of lots of children and did her best to give them all a better start. And that preacher whispered, can't you see the promised land? As he laid his bloodstained Bible in that hooker's hand. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. Why there's not four of them, heaven only knows. I guess it's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. That's a story that our preacher told last Sunday. As he held that bloodstained Bible up for all of us to see, he said, bless the farmer and the teacher and the preacher. We gave this Bible to my mama, who read it to me. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway. While there's not four of them, now I guess we know. It's not what you take when you leave this world behind you. It's what you leave behind you when you go. There are three wooden crosses on the right side of the highway.
Wow, what a great ballad. Three wooden crosses. Randy Travis, this is Paul Fromm. My son, Ottomund, as always, do with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighty side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave father